Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's interview chair, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and Pro Plan. This week's a special guest, Westminster Kennel Club President Donald Sturz. I've been waiting for this one, and sit back and relax. It's a wonderful interview. Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's edition of the interview chair with Westminster Kennel Club President Don Sturz. How are you, Don?
I'm great, Will. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to see you. Thanks for squeezing us into your busy life. I know how crazy it is. Things are good in New York right now. Is that where you are?
Yeah, I'm home in Brooklyn, and frigid and cold, but selling that to a Canadian is probably not a good approach for me.
Well, you've been up here enough, you know what it's like. So
yes, I do.
All right, let's get started. I'd like to know, tell us how you got started in this crazy world of dogs, please. Sure. And how old you were.
Sure. Well, my family actually got a dog as a result of my sister being afraid of dogs. My parents thought that that would be the best way to get her past that fear was to bring a dog into the family. And the neighbor had a golden retriever who was a wonderful, dog. And so they asked them where they got their golden retriever, as one does. And they referred us to the breeder they had gotten their dog from. My parents went and, got a puppy. And, the sole purpose being, to just be a family companion. And like I said, to help my sister, get used to dogs. And then that breeder invited us to a puppy match. And I was 8 years old at the time. And they basically were like, oh, you should show the puppy. And so I was elected to be the one to go run in the ring. And they, put a show leash on and they said, okay, hold it and just do what the judge says and run around and everything, and it would be great. The story would be really great to say like, oh, and we won, but that's not what happened. It was, but it was a fun experience and I had a good time. And my parents, enjoyed meeting, all the other golden retriever, owners and breeders. And they thought, well, this might be a fun family activity. And, as, typically turns out, the first dog was not really confirmation competitive quality. And so, my parents decided to get a, quote, show quality, golden retriever that we could, compete with. And that's really how it all started. And so I showed in junior showmanship immediately. But the following year, we'd gotten the puppy. I started showing in junior showmanship when I was 9 years old, and showed for the first time in junior showmanship at Westminster when I was 10 years old, into the finals, which I can only imagine had to be like just a huge cuteness factor, because I was a 10-year-old kid with this big blonde golden retriever named Clyde who I could hardly see over, and but I did. I was out in that big floor at 10 years of age. So
wow.
It's and then it's just gone on from there. Obviously I didn't miss one, from that point forward, and showing in junior showmanship and so on. And I showed in confirmation as a kid. My parents, really made that, available and accessible to me. So I had the benefit of both, the junior showmanship, side of it, but also competing with adults, in the breed ring at a very young age. And which I think, honed my skills, because I was very
no question.
Yeah. And just being immersed, in that level, of talent and so on. So, and then, ended up, continuing, to show dogs. I started, working for a variety of different handlers. I was always very, excited to learn about new breeds. My parents were
Who did you work for, if you don't mind?
Sure. Well, I back in the day, handlers would grab you, just at any moment to like, can you run this dog up to the ring and so on. So I was always one of the kids that the Forsythes grabbed, to run dogs back and forth to the ring. Times where I was assisting, a number of the poodle handlers like Richard Bauer and Wendell Sammet and Bud Dickey and Joe Bergnetti. And that's, I really got immersed in poodles. I got my first standard poodle when I was 13 or 14. And And I saw that cover on Camel Review of Frank Sabella with Command Performance on the beach.
Great cover.
And I was like, I want that. And it happened, Ray and Ginger Scott had an Alakai bred standard bitch, and Doug and Mike Scott were showing in junior showmanship with me. We were friends. And I got to, fuss around. We used to play dog show after the dog show, where we'd all bring dogs and stuff. And so their white standard bitch, her name was Cher. I got to, show her in our, fake dog shows. And I just was really enamored with that. And when she was bred, Ray and Ginger offered me a puppy. And as luck would have it, that bitch had been bred to Command Performance. So I ended up getting that white standard poodle dog that I dreamed about, actually, and showed him and finished him, showed him in junior showmanship. His name was Josh. And that's how the whole poodle thing started. And I was just so enamored with that breed and the presentation. And as you know, well, it's a culture unto itself, and the skills that are required, to really present, that breed at the highest levels. It's just not something you kind of walk in and do. And I was really fortunate, to learn from, some of the, most famous and talented, people. Like, I remember going to the Golden Retriever National in California. I was probably, maybe around 1976 or so. And we stopped at an all breed show out there, and I got to go see Rimskittle Barter Bride being shown by Tim Brazier. I guess I was pretty confident, because I walked up, to him after to ask him, like, how do you make that top knot look like that? Like, I'd not seen that, done, so beautifully. No. That way. And
she changed it for me too, that bitch.
Oh, yes. Sorry. And it was just I'd seen all the photos, and then so to see that, in person and see the preparation, just moments like that I just soaked up, whatever I could. And eventually ended up, working pretty consistently for Patty Proctor. And that's, become a lifelong friendship. She was the one who helped me with my first poodle, Josh, because we lived in the same town. And then when she became a professional handler, I decided, that's the person I want, to work with. And I really do attribute to Patty to a great deal, that my ethics with regards to the sport, like, it, how one conducts themselves and how one prioritizes the welfare, of the dogs first always. And, just the way one conducts themselves, at a dog show. I learned all of that. I started working for her at just the right time in those formative years as like an older adolescent. And I really attribute that to the time that I spent with her. And then I went on from there, started judging at a very young age. I actually started judging when I was...
I remember your Irish setter bitch though.
Yeah, Cassis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, I think, that's one of the things I think that's been helpful for me in my judging career, is that, I had this opportunity to have hands-on experiences with so many different breeds of dogs, both through working for handlers, but also I owned a lot of them myself. I look at dogs like living art, and I think, when you really immerse yourself in a breed and you really, get to know them and live with them and understand it, it just gives you a different perspective than going to a judge's education or, just reading, the standard or an article. And so,
for sure.
I was really fortunate, I had parents who were very indulgent in that way, that, as long as I committed to taking care of the dogs, which that was my life. I woke up in the morning, took care of dogs, came home from school, took care of dogs. And before I went to bed, took care of dogs. Like, that's all I did, as a kid. So not so well-rounded, but very committed. And I did over the years own lots of different breeds of dogs singularly. So yes, for me, I think most people know me as having, a very deep background in golden retrievers and poodles. But over the years, I've owned lots of different breeds. And so I think that's helped me as a judge, you know, to kind of...
No question.
And yeah, and then the judging, you know, began, you know, when I was, like I said, I was probably about 29 or 30 when I started judging. And, you know, that I always say kind of was an activity that I had started at a very young age. And this is going to just tell you how much of a geek I was. I when the dog magazines, mainly Kennel Review, would come, I would get out a pad of paper and I would go through the magazine and I would find all the sporting dogs and write the breed and the page number. And then I'd go back and I would judge the group. I would look at the photos and I'd place them. And
I did the same thing.
Oh my God, that was a thing for me. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, how I approach judging, and that, you know, sometimes I don't think people realize there's multiple processes. It's, you know, evaluating and sorting are two different levels of thinking. And so, you know, I think those early activities actually honed my skills for my role as a judge later. But you can say it's just always been there. The passion has always been there, you know, from childhood. So yeah, and here we are now.
I remember exactly doing the same thing. In Canada, we had a newspaper, Dogs in Canada. So the pictures would be like little squares. Now, best dog in this page, best dog in that page. So what made you decide to go into judging at such a young age then?
I think one, because I just enjoyed that process, right? Like we were just talking about, I find that very engaging and intriguing for me. You know, the evaluation of dogs and then the sorting of classes and so on. And the appreciation, like I said, I think, you know, I tend to look at dogs as living art. And so it's, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, I'm giving back to the sport. It was not that for me. It was purely selfish. I just really love dogs. And this was a way for me to experience them and engage with them, you know, in a way than other than I had been doing, you know, for my entire life at that point, essentially. And I do enjoy conversations with, you know, the exhibitors, especially breeders, you know, talking about, you know, their dogs in particular, or talking about the breed in general, you know, where the breed is at, you know, what are the struggles any breed is having, you know, learning what are those, you know, hard to gets and hold on tos that I think judges, you know, that you want to put more value on that. What are the drags on a breed? You know, what are breeders struggling to hold on to or to get back? I love those kind of conversations. And I find over time with judging, you know, I am that guy that I do actually look at the catalog afterwards, more so because I like to follow like families of dogs and breeders, and it intrigues me when I, you know, been following, you know, a particular breeder over years or a particular family over years. And, you know, that's always so cool as a judge when, like, you know, someone's like, oh my God, you know, you put up her daughter or her granddaughter. And then, you know, so either that means, you know, I was, you know, I'm truly gifted, or I've just was a fool twice. I don't know.
But I've always said that about you, Don, is that you find families of dogs that you're, and the reason I showed to you, you're always good at finding certain families of those breeds, and you stuck with them if you liked them. So
yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. So you know, that's you know, the judging has been amazing in that it's taking me to places I would probably not have gone otherwise, you know, from a travel point of view, and you got to meet people from all over the world and see, you know, the breeds as they exist in all different parts of the world. And that informs your eye. I think it makes you think, you know, in ways differently.
Well, there's no question. I remember being in Ireland one time and I found some dogs, but you had to adjust your eye to a lot of, like, Springer Spaniels. I saw a dog over there. Someone showed me a dog over there. He was tremendous. There was no question. He was a tremendous animal. Would he win over here? Probably not, but he was a beautiful animal. Like, he was really, I was so glad to have had my hands on him and see him.
Yeah. So. And I think you come back, you know, looking at, you know, dogs and the breed, say when you get home and so on. And you're like, wow, you know, they've got something to offer. Like, you know, I might not want the whole, but there's aspects, you know, where, you know, you say, you know, that would be useful if somebody was clever enough to figure out how to, you know, incorporate that, you know. I haven't traveled, you know, in quite some time because of my career, and just, you know, that's just hard to do for, you know, a weekend and then be home in time to be at work in the morning. But
right.
Life has changed, and you know, next year actually is going to be a year of travel for me. I kind of purposely decided, okay, I'm going to allow myself this adventure, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, going some places I haven't been before, and you know, seeing dogs and people that, you know, I've not seen before. And, you know, so yeah, so 2026 is going to be an interesting year, starting with obviously, you know, Westminster's 150th anniversary show in February. And then
exciting.
I'm off on my world tour after that.
But you brought Westminster up.
Your show in Canada be one of my first stops in 2026.
Oh, the old York Kennel Club. Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to having you up here. So. That starts this week, actually. I'm picking up judges starting tomorrow.
Wow.
So, yeah. So Westminster, how did that all come about?
So, you know, obviously, it's been a big part of my life, as I said. You know, I started to show the first time when I was 10. I've never missed one since. I've competed as a junior, competed in confirmation, you know, and judged there 10 times, which, you know, was really, I'm completely, you know, just in awe of that opportunity, you know, to have judged there and done well enough to be invited back, you know, numerous times, and then to, you know, have the opportunity to, you know, judge, you know, two groups, and then finally, you know, that pinnacle for any judge, you know, to judge best in show at Westminster, which we can now go back to saying the Garden, you know, completely and honestly.
I like that. That sounds good.
I think, you know, when I was invited to become a member, you know, that was another moment of, you know, you know, kind of like, really? Like, that always seemed so, you know, kind of like an ivory tower. And I think to a lot of people, it, you know, it's something, there's a mystique there about, you know, what Westminster is and who the members are and all of that. And so to...
When did you become a member? What year?
Three years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 years. No, actually, I judged Best in Show in 22. It was 22. So yeah, 3 years ago. That's right. Yeah. I was a member when I judged Best. I was invited to be a member and then got invited to do Best in Show shortly thereafter. So that was pretty cool.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I've been in and then, you know, and then got elected to be president a couple of years ago. I was really only a member for a very short time. And then that came into play, which is a huge, huge honor, huge responsibility, especially given
I can't even fathom it.
Yeah,
but I just you're the perfect person for the job, though. It just seemed to fit so naturally.
Thank you. It was, you know, a challenge because, you know, it was, you know, we were displaced, you know, for, you know, a few years, right? You know, COVID knocked us out. We had to, you know, regroup. And I think that's an amazing thing about Westminster's history is that, you know, it has continuously run, you know, for 150 years. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, the club was committed to was that it's just not an option for there not to be a show that year. You know, it changed the time of year, it changed the venue, but there was going to be a show. And so that's kind of how those, you know, those last, you know, 4 years had gone was, you know, just this commitment, you know, to maintaining the continuity and also having the event be as representative of Westminster's greatness as it could be, given, you know, the circumstances, right? You know, and I think each year, although it was different, I think it hit that mark. I think, you know, at Lyndhurst, you know, the atmosphere and the creation of that tent/building, you know, where they're like, you know, that's the length, right, to which Westminster goes, you know, and you know, with our partners, you know, Fox Sports and Purina Pro Plan, you know, it makes those, you know, things possible, you know, to kind of bring that level of adaptation to the situation. And then, you know, trying to get closer to home, you know, we got, you know, to, you know, the tennis center. And that was a unique experience. I think that was kind of a fun experience. It was a bit more kind of country fair like feeling. But, you know, it wasn't, It wasn't Manhattan. It wasn't, Madison Square Garden. And so to be able to, finally, get back home, right, so to speak. And a big piece of that puzzle was the Javits Center, because, with Madison Square Garden, obviously previously we'd been at the Piers, things had changed, with the remodeling there, the spaces of it, we just couldn't have the daytime judging there anymore. And that's how the Piers came, about. And, but the Piers weren't an option anymore. They Pier 92 fell in the water, and Pier 94 was being remodeled into much smaller individual units. It would no longer be like a big event space. And so it really literally all rested on whether we could get Javits to allow us to be there. And so I was really thrilled when that happened, we were able to, forge that relationship, and that partnership has been amazing, both with both venues. The teams at Madison Square Garden and at Javits were both incredible to work with. We were meeting every week, since, I would say July of last year, we had weekly meetings with both venues. We were in both venues, probably once a month. And so it was an intense relationship building and plotting and planning and all of that. And so you were there, you got to be a part of that return.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. I've been doing Westminster with my parents. I started in 75, and it was always, the garden was always a mystique, especially when you started handling there, the garden. So I think I did my first, time there as a handler was with Garrett Lambert, actually. Allison and I went with Garrett Lambert. He talked us through all the different things of it. But I had a lot of benchmark moments at the garden. And it wasn't even to do with even the Beagle winning. It was like certain dogs that caught, like just the excitement of it all. Yeah. And this year we were back at the garden, and when Betson's showing in the ring and the just the atmosphere, I started getting those same goosebumps again. It was incredible. And to think that I got to judge there this year, that was another incredible moment. But just the feeling of being home. And then, like I said, I think I now have a new benchmark, and it was this year. And it wasn't because of my involvement. It was the garden involvement. It was very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was electric there at night. It really was.
It really, truly was. I remember sitting in the judges' rows, and I was as it was getting closer to the end of it. I was just you want to almost fall off your chair. It was so exciting.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. It was incredible.
Last year's was exciting too, and Cause One with the miniature poodle. That was heartstrings for us all. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that was story. That was like storytale, like that was perfection. There are just some years where there's no denying there's a dog whose night it is, and I thought that was one of those nights that
you're bringing me goosebumps again.
Yeah, it's pure perfection from his clever choice to carry her out of the tunnel. Right. And place her and let her, and anybody who's shown miniature poodles will completely understand that.
Oh, exactly.
So clever. And then from that moment forward, it was like flawless. This is a gorgeous dog, perfectly presented. And,
lesson in presentation. There was no question.
Yeah, there's no question. Nothing against any of the competitors. It's just,
of course not.
It happens. Because pre-show and during show interviews, I get asked that question a lot. Like, what determines the dog who wins best in show? And my standard answer has become that, you've got a show of 2,500 champions, and the level of quality and the intensity of the competition, all the dogs who walk in there at the end are going to be, of a level of excellence, right? That you can't argue with. But there'll be a great dog who's having a great night. And that's the way it should go, right? That's the way
that's
you want
right.
it. And that was certainly one of them. And I think, you and I could probably sit down and come up with lots of nights like that in Westminster history where it was just, it was that dog's night, undeniably, So
And that's just adds to the feeling of New York.
Yeah.
It really does. And I used to get so excited waiting. apprehensive and excited waiting for New York. Apprehensive, what's the weather going to be like to get there? Because you drove 20 dogs there or something. And you had to get there.
It's not easy. You know, it's, getting, coming to New York City and navigating New York City. And, no matter what the circumstances, it's not your every weekend, dog show adventure, right? And so I think that's one of the reasons why Westminster has really leaned into this notion of really giving tremendous thought to the exhibitor and dog experience, and I hope that came through this year, that it was something that the feedback I was getting, that people were very appreciative of being able to see it and feel it, right? That we just something as simple as, the aisles for the benching area, where we gave people a good amount of space. And, and there were a few people like, you've got so much space here. You could get more dogs in here. And I was like, no, like, this is just right, it's just right. And, there's nothing to sneeze at. 2,500 champions. I mean, that's a pretty amazing event. I don't know of any other, dog show in the world that can lay that claim of being a champions only event with that number of champions, competing. And the hundreds that don't get in, that's the other part of it. That's part of the, I think, the adventure, right? It's just getting the entry in to begin with and then on from there.
I've been on the opposite when it's a certain dog you wanted to get in doesn't get in and you're like, oh.
Similarly for us on that side, we want all of the, the very best. And sometimes it just doesn't, work out, like the timing, like Sage, won best in show last year, but her entry didn't get in the previous year because of just the way the qualification period fell and her campaign fell. And like, she just, she didn't hit that top five kind of thing. And so, so she was thrown in the random selection, just like everybody else the previous year, and then didn't get in and then does get in the next year and wins the whole damn thing.
Yeah. But even little things like walking through the lobby of the New Yorker, that brought back so many memories. It even reminded me of the Penta, like just because of the atmosphere
all of the conversations and the people in seats and the comings and goings. Yeah, that was a conscious decision. Yeah, we kind of went with nostalgia and sentimentality on that. It's a bit dated and so on, but I think that was part of the
experience. Adds to it, though.
Yeah, and the TikTok diner. Who doesn't love the TikTok diner at midnight?
Exactly. Oh, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
So next year is 150. Is there anything you can tell us about that event?
Going into this year, we approached this like the dress rehearsal. We all kept saying that on the team. It's, this is our dress rehearsal. This is, so we can, get the kinks out. So, for the 150th, like we do it, really well and we do it right. And I think what happened is instead of it being a dress rehearsal, it really came out like opening night. Like it was a resounding success. And of course, are there things that we can tweak and edges that we can smooth? And yes, we came, one of the things we were doing all week long was we kept a running list of, kind of insights and awarenesses and things that, next year. And we had our first recap meeting actually the week after the show, literally the following Tuesday, and went through those lists and nothing major, but just little, things that are very easily done. Like something like, when you run an event and you lay it out, on paper on the CADs, things don't necessarily, they looked tighter. They looked more crowded on the CAD than when we got into the space. And so we had more space to play with than we realized. And so we're going to use that to create, more comfort. I'll say that. I don't want to give away too many secrets, but what I will say is we definitely went through that weekend with a critical eye and noticed, things that we want to either, change up, add, enhance, that kind of thing. And it's all around that. It's around the exhibitor experience, the spectator experience, it making it more comfortable, making it more accessible, creating, I will say, like the marketplace, we were very conservative in the use of that hall. And we are definitely going to be doing more in that hall. And the storyline for the 150th is the history and being able to try to create an immersive experience, you know, within the halls, you know, where people can, you know, from engage and experience the history in lots of different ways. So I'll give you that, but not much more.
That's a good hint, though. That makes me, you know, yeah, you're excited now about that.
Yes. And I think, you know, one of the things, you know, that's telling the story, you know, because it's pretty amazing. And, you know, when you think of Westminster and it happened every year and trying to put it in historical context of what was going on in the world at that time. And, you know, there were, you know, think about all the things that have happened in, you know, world history over that 150 year period. And yet every year the Westminster Dog Show happened regardless. Right. And so that's kind of what we're leaning into, is to try to kind of create that parallel between Westminster history and, you know, world and New York City history, and just to create that context for people, you know. And so we'll see what we end up with, but that's the theme and the storyline we're going to follow.
Sounds exciting. Look forward to it. The Westminster was great. I'm going to go back to Dawn for a second. Sure. What about, what's next for you? How are you? Are you going to go for more breeds, more groups? What are you going to do?
No.
No? You have enough?
So
you're busy enough.
I'm busy enough. And I will say this. I felt very strongly when I went into judging, and this is not a judgment. This is just what works for me personally, is that I wanted to be able to go in and judge breeds and come out and have a meaningful conversation with anybody that asked me about why I did what I did. You know, I didn't ever want to, you know, find myself in that situation where, you know, I just fell back on like kind of generic, you know, coming and going kind of answers, right? And so in order to do that, I felt like my wheelhouse from life experience, either from what I did personally or the handlers that I worked for and so on, like really my personal immersed experience was in the sporting and hound groups. Like those are the groups in which I owned and showed dogs and worked for handlers who had lots of those breeds at one point or another. And then obviously poodles, right? And so people are like, well, why didn't you go for the non-sporting group? It's a smaller group. It's a quick one. You could have banged that out. And because I have no experience with any of those other breeds, like it just didn't make sense to me. You know, like a sporting and a hound, I love because you can compare and contrast, you know, and there are like what I call like families of breeds, right? Like you talk about the retrievers and you can compare and contrast each of the retriever breeds, and you can compare and contrast each of the setter breeds. And that's what I enjoy. And that's what helps me to appreciate them and to understand, you know, the details, right? What makes, you know, the English setter distinctly different from the Irish setter and so on. And, you know, similarly in the hound group, it's, you know, you've got, you know, sight hounds and scent hounds and all of the, you know, the commonalities, and then all of the things that differentiate them. And so that's what intrigues me. And that's what I based my whole approach to judging on. And so I really kind of sat on those two groups. You know, I that's what I got and that's what I did. And then a couple of breeds here and there, like, you know, poodles was one of my first breeds. I got my first judging approval was golden retrievers, Labrador retrievers, poodles, and Pembroke Welsh corgis. All four breeds I had bred and owned. Like that was what I started with, and then went from there. Clearly, didn't do any other herding breeds because I had no other experience. It was just Pembrokes. That was my, you know, I was very deeply involved with them for about 20 years, and then like, but none of the other herding breeds, you know, and I just didn't. And so it was the same kind of, I think, perception. And so time went on. I got a couple of other breeds. There was a point in time where AKC was attempting to, you know, move some people forward, and I was offered a group years ago, and I decided to apply for one breed. I felt like that was me kind of taking a stand, so to speak, a position. And so I had at the time become very intrigued by bull terriers, and I had been doing a lot of studying and had gone to Silverwood a couple of times and just really immersed myself in that breed. And so that was the breed that I would like to apply for bull terriers. And I remember Ed Bibbin calling me and goes, is this some kind of a joke? He's like, And I was like, no. I said, I'm really enamored and intrigued with the breed, and I've really immersed myself in it and studied it. And that's the next breed I want to judge. And that was really where I stood on that. I just didn't see myself doing a whole nother group. Fast forward decades, I was fortunate enough to be offered again an opportunity to progress, and encouraged by a lot of people to progress. And so I chose to pursue the working group because I felt like it fit with the way that I look at sporting dogs and hounds, and that I always look at those breeds in relevant to the jobs they were bred to do and the places that they were developed, the conditions under which they worked and so on. And so I felt of all the groups, the easiest transition for me with that mindset of how I think about dogs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. And so, so that's what I did. And what was hard for me was, I had, fallen into this practice of like this deep immersion. Like in the middle of all that, I applied for Pekingese because I was intrigued with them and ended up having, one and so applied for Pekingese, right? How many Pekingese are going to be at a dog show and how frequently is one going to judge them? But I was like, I really love this breed and I'm going to do that. Right. So now I'm back in this place of which many judges do, right, where they do, large numbers of breeds at a time. And I will say, I think I'm a, fairly competent individual. I still have my faculties about me, and I find it challenging, to really kind of study, large numbers of breeds and retaining all that information, especially when I don't have necessarily a personal background right in them, which is what I've always kind of leaned on. And so it was a challenge, for me mentally. Like I remember being so stressed out about the interview for the first half of the working group. And, Jane Myers was the rep who interviewed me for that first half. And she's like, what is the matter with you? Like, why are you so nervous? And I said, because this is really important. And I'm not sure, that I'm retaining all of the information that you're going to ask me to give back to you. And so she's like, well, take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. And of course we ended up having a beautiful conversation, about, all these breeds that I was applying for. And she was very reassuring. She says, you've got this. Like, one of the things that helped me was bringing photos. I went online and looked for photos of dogs that I thought to my eye, were excellent representatives of each. And that helps me have my conversations in these interviews, about these different breeds. And, Jane made the comment. She goes, we don't even have to talk just by looking at the photos you chose. She says, it's showing me your eye, for that breed, like what appealed to you. Right. And so that's how I got through that. And now I'm on the second half of the working group. I just got approved for that this year. And, I still, I'm very challenged with that. Like I take it very seriously. Like I think it's a responsibility for a judge. You're not just in there.
Yes, I agree.
Hand out ribbons. You should think that your choices, is some sort of feedback, right? Like for both the exhibitor and the breeders, and you want that feedback to have some validity to it. I'm also not too proud to like have conversations, after these, some of these, lesser, known or less popular working breeds. I've loved those conversations where I've just by the luck of the draw gotten, a sizable entry of a breed that you don't normally see many of, and those conversations that the exhibitors afterwards, to be able to say like, I looked at this in this way, am I in the ballpark here? Like what, I don't think that's bad for a judge to do that. I think that's, that reflection after you're judging, that was something that I learned from Michelle Billings years ago. We were sitting in an airport and after a show, and, she just started like, unprompted talking about, English setters, actually. It was an English setter entry. And she was talking about how, in rethinking it, that she thinks perhaps she was too hard on a particular animal for a particular point or feature. And And that she needs to remember next time, like maybe not to bang so hard on that. Like she might have done something differently. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like here's one of my, you know, idols, Michelle Billings. Thinking and saying, like reflecting. And that freed me up like for the future to be like, that's a good thing. Like to like rethink, reflect, you know, think about your reasons, you know, and so as a judge, I enjoy those opportunities, you know, to have those kinds of conversations that then help me, you know, going forward and knowing like, you know what, maybe I did screw it up today, you know, like, you know, and next time I won't make that mistake. I won't perhaps bang that feature as hard or dismiss, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, like, cause we all can get hung up on something, right? Sometimes, and you just have to be reminded. It's like, you know, yes, you can go in, but you got to zoom back out. Right. And take the whole package. And I think when, you know, whenever I had conversations with, you know, judges who I respected over the years, that was a common theme that both surprised me, but I admired was their ability to be humble and say things like, you know, certain breeds are harder for me than others. You know, certain breeds are more challenging for me than others. And you know, without saying names or name dropping or whatever, it just, you know, it was like, wow, if that individual can say to me that that's a breed that they, you know, find a challenge, then why can't, you know, that should be okay for me too, right? That there's, you know, breeds that I have to think a little harder. I have to prepare a little more. And then other breeds that I can do with my eyes closed. You know, it's like just, yeah. You know, and that's okay too, that there are just breeds that are so familiar to me or so clear to me that... I don't have to give it much thought. It's just, I see it immediately, you know, or breeds that as a judge, you know, being able to know the difference between certain breeds, you know, you can judge with your eye and other breeds, you've got to be able to judge and see with your hands, you know, and knowing the difference, but, you know, and your examination, you know, is going to be, you know, affected by that, right? The need a breed has as to the extent it could be judged by eyes and judged by hands, you know? And so, yeah, I take it very seriously. I think that's why I didn't really push further. And this will be it. The working group is it for me. It's I have a lot of work to do with the working group. I'm like my constantly reviewing and studying, and I enjoy them. I really do. And I'm glad I did it because I think it's good at this stage of life to have something new and fresh. You know, to, you know, kind of stimulate me and challenge me. And I hope that, you know, the working breeds that I've done, you know, thus far, the shows that I've done, that people will at least, if they didn't agree with me, were able to follow me and also be able to see that I really was taking it seriously and giving it a tremendous amount of thought and attention. So
I think that's the main thing. When they feel that way, they don't have to win all the time, but they feel like you've given your best, your all. That's how I feel when I'm judging. But I had a moment like that with Dr. Michael Woods through Labradors, because that's a breed he can do with his eyes closed.
Yep.
Labradors. And I judged the day before Michael somewhere. So I got to sit and watch Michael the next day, and he was great because he would I'd ask him about that class, and he would explain it to me, and it would make perfect sense to me. I'm just so glad I had someone like that to refer to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we all have to, you know, feel comfortable with that. Like, it's not like just because you become a judge, all of a sudden you're an expert and you shouldn't have questions or you shouldn't be unsure. Right. And I think that, you know, that was, you know, for me, having those conversations with, like I said, individuals who were icons and idols of mine, and seeing that, you know, that humility, you know, is, we all have to be reminded that that's okay. And it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, it is a good thing. I agree. So, I can't even ask you what's next for Donald, because you just told me about the working group. What else can you tell us, Don? What else is there?
Well, you know, right now for me, obviously, you know, Westminster is all consuming, and I
can't imagine.
I certainly didn't realize it coming into it, and I think probably most people don't realize that, you know, it really is a year round. Process. And, you know, I think it's, you know, the Westminster Kennel Club members are so committed, you know, to, the paying homage to the history and being committed to, you know, making sure there's a legacy and all of that. And so they're really supportive and so that's really great to, you know, have that behind you, right, as you move forward. And I've got a great Westminster team, and we've got you know, it's a small team. I think people would be shocked at how small the team is, but we also have a number of partners who we contract out with. And so it's a lot of moving parts. You know, it's like a big puzzle with lots of pieces that you kind of move around until they fit just so. You know, so that's, I've taken that to heart. I feel that's a tremendous responsibility, you know, and very committed to that for the near future, for however long, you know, that role continues for me. Like I said, next year is my year of having the opportunity of some international
travel year.
I think this year, actually, I'm really excited. I'm going to be judging in England for the first time, which I'll be honest, I never thought, you know, would be something that would happen because, I think it's unusual, you know, for Americans to be invited there because, you know, some of the breeds are so different, you know, and like right. To your point, you know, in Ireland, we were looking at Springers. I think they, you know, and probably understandably may think our eye is somewhat, you know, going to be off, right, from the kinds of dogs they would exhibit to us. But I'm going to the City of Birmingham show in August, and I've got a beautiful assignment. I'm doing Golden Retrievers, which are so close to my heart.
That'll be great, though. Yeah, really, you'll really love great. That. Yeah.
I'm doing Poodles. I'm doing Pembroke Welsh Corgis, Bull Terriers, and Afghans. So awesome. I think that's the most incredible assignment. I'm really, really excited about that. Yeah, yeah.
Golden Retrievers, I'd love to watch you do them over there. That'd be fabulous. I love watching them over there. So.
Yeah. I think, I'm very comfortable with the differences in the breed on both sides of the pond, so to speak, and I have an affinity for much of what the dogs in Europe have to offer in that breed. So I'm really excited to see what walks in the ring.
Oh, for sure, that will be exciting. Well, all right. Well, I appreciate you giving us your time, Don. I couldn't wait for this interview, so we did it.
We did. This was fun. Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It was great.
Oh, thanks for making time for us, Don. And yeah. I can't wait till next year. You whet our appetite just enough that I can't wait to see what you guys come up with. So
there you go.
I got all these things going through my head now, and I go, that'll be fabulous. That'll be great.
That's exactly what I wanted. So mission accomplished.
Well, you did it.
Cool. Thank you so much. All right.
Well, thank you, Don. I appreciate it. Thanks, Don. You whet our appetite just enough that we can't wait for next year. So. Can't wait. Thank you, Don. If you like what you see here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button, and we'll see you next time on the Interview Chair.